Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
Around your hooks and jabs look at the female boxing world on a special night of Wednesday. Usually we go every other Thursday, but we got some things coming up tomorrow night, so we decided to have this show tonight. Today is episode number 67. My name is Felipe Leon, and tonight I'm very, very excited because once again we have our third co-host. We have tried it in the past, and for whatever reason it hasn't worked, but I got a good feeling about this one. With us as part of the show now is none other than Lupi Gutierrez, part of the Beautiful Brawlers out here on the West Coast. But I'm going to pass the mic to her so she can tell us a little bit about her background in boxing and especially in female boxing. Lupi, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for bringing me into your world. I'm Lupi Gutierrez. I'm the head of media for Beautiful Brawlers and Babyface Boxing out of Pacifica, California. My sister owns Babyface Boxing, and she founded that. My dad was a boxer out of Mexico, El Costeñito, and he came to the United States in the 50s, and that's when he became Babyface. So after he passed away in 2000, my sister wanted to keep his name going, and that's where our passion comes from. My social media platform is Boxing Meets Beauty, and I showcase and promote beautiful brawlers as well as the amateur females throughout the nation, and I have my favorite pros. I have a son with Down syndrome, and I also advocate for inclusion in school and sports. So basically, you know, I do a lot more. I fundraise for our girls, and I raise money not only for Beautiful Brawlers and our Beautiful Brawlers International team, which we started last year. We went to Canada, kicked butt, came back, and I also raise money for individual girls in our team and just help, you know, with sponsorships and gifts throughout the year for the girls. They need it, you know. They work really hard. Mm-hmm. Their parents sacrifice everything.
Very good, very good. Before we get a little bit more into that, because I have some questions regarding that, let me introduce, obviously, the legend, the Mr. Southern California Boxing, Mr. David Avila, who is part of the he's the main part of the show. David, how you doing tonight?
I'm good. No, I'm not really the main part. But I like to be included with this, and I love this show. And I'm very honored to have Lupi with our show, because we just needed somebody who – with her kind of knowledge.
Yes, and that's one thing that I've always felt, David, before we get back to with Lupi and some questions that I have for her, is that, you know, we started this show and we had obviously Babyface, Elena Reed, which was great, and a couple others before that. And we're two guys, and we follow female boxing, and we understand it, and we support it, but we have to have that woman's point of view, which sometimes we can't have it because we're not women. And with Lupi here, I follow her on social media. I know who she is. Unfortunately, we never met in person, but I'm sure we will soon. I'm familiar with her sister, Blanca Gutierrez. I've actually met her at a couple of the conventions, the WBC conventions. So I'm glad that Lupi is here. Lupi, tell us a little bit about Beautiful Brawlers. I know that you guys support a lot of amateur boxers, especially in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Pacifica, out there. How did that all get started? Yes. I know Martha Salazar, the former heavyweight champion, is part of your camp. And also, yes. I believe, Elisa Olsen, who has a storied career. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how that started and how it developed to what it is now, which is, I'm sure, world recognized as a major amateur program.
Yeah, it is worldwide. So my sister and Martha started this. They go way back. I mean, we're talking 20, 25 years, 30 years. when they were started in the amateurs, and my sister started a little late in her career, but they were never accepted into any of the gyms. Nobody wanted to train them. You know, my sister had a fight, and they didn't want to train her. So she finally got a fight, and she remembers being left in the ring because she lost. She didn't even have a stool, didn't have a bucket, and they left her. You know, so Martha's trainer at the time, Dee Puller, pulled Blanca into his circle. You know, so what they wanted to do was have a place where they can have their own, you know. So Blanca started Babyface Boxing. And together, her and Martha, they went their separate ways for a while, came back together. And together they took Martha all the way. WBC, 2015 Heavyweight World Champ. And they did it because they needed to, you know. And they wanted a place for other females to feel comfortable. And in the gym, that's what you go. You go right in. It's a beautiful feeling, you know, when you – it's safe sport, you know, you're safe there, you're learning. You have Martha Salazar, Corinna Moreno, Mighty Melissa McMorrow. I mean, they come in to help. They come in to train with the girls. You know, they support beautiful brawlers. So that's how this all started with Babyface.
Perfect.
And then the shows, we're on our ninth show this Labor Day weekend. Blanca created Beautiful Brawlers, the show, which he's been doing. Like I said, so this will be the ninth show on Labor Day weekend, and here we are. And the show gets better and better. This year, it's in conjunction with the Women's International Boxing Hall of Fame. So Sue Fox is bringing her event to the show, which David Avila, you are being inducted, as we all know, as well as Blanca and Martha.
We all know David. I mean, there's not a hall in boxing that David is not a part of, and if he's not, he's gonna be soon. And I'm talking about the big one, Canastota.
Yeah.
But he's in the California already one, right, David?
Well, the one I was inducted to was the World Boxing Hall of Fame. I don't think it exists anymore.
Oh,
see, that's
okay.
What happened. I joined, it doesn't exist.
Well, I mean,
well, you guys have somebody to advocate for you now to get into those other Hall of
Fame. He will. But he's going to go into the female. He's going to go into the International Female Boxing Hall of Fame. It's going to be held with you guys in conjunction up there in Pacifica. And I also have a connection because for the last, since it started, I've actually helped Sue, who obviously is, I mean, the queen of the female boxing support. I've helped her with the program. I designed the program and I put it together for her. So I'm going to do that this year for her as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're all a part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, before we get even more carried away, we do have a very special guest today in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and it's going to be none other than WBC Silver Light Flyweight Champion Zeniesa Estrada, who is fighting next Thursday out here in Hollywood, California, where David is going to be first row to cover that fight. And we'll be talking about that on our next show, which is scheduled for June 20th. But Zeniesa is going to be with us tonight in an interview. I think she was with you guys. Is she still up there with you guys, or she left already?
No, she left. So she came up. It was day before yesterday, and her dad was interested in some sparring, so I passed it over to Blanca, and Blanca put some stuff together, and she actually sparred with two of our Beautiful Brawlers International team members, Destiny Nino and Mariana Gonzalez, who is a 2020 Olympic hopeful. She just qualified for Olympic trials at Nationals in March.
I
heard there was some good work.
I would have paid money to see her spar. I would have paid money to see her spar McMorrow, though, because McMorrow's tough.
Yeah, McMorrow is tough, but I hear Zeniesa has that heavy body shot, you know. I hear it was some good work that went on.
Well, we'll talk about it with Zeniesa, who should be calling in about 10 minutes. And also, if you want to join us here on the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jabs look at the female boxing world, you can do so by dialing 323-580-5735, 323-580-5735. And tonight's a special night. We're having the show on a Wednesday night. We usually have it on Thursday, every other Thursday night, with our next show scheduled for June 20th. But like I mentioned, we have some things going on tomorrow, and we didn't want the week to pass up and not talk about the big fights that happened in the last couple of weeks. So let's go to our fight results, starting off on Thursday, May 23rd, where a minor upset was lived at the Casino del Sol in Tucson, Arizona, with Ikram Kerwat, who is trained by Roy Jones Jr., lost a unanimous decision against Brazilian Simon Aparecida de Silva in a 10-rounder at featherweight. The scores there were 100-90, 99-91, and 98-92. David, did you get a chance to see this fight? I know it was, I think it was broadcast on Facebook or something like that.
No, no, I was at another fight card. I did hear it. And I was like, what? I thought for sure Roy Jones, his fighter would win.
Yeah, this Kerwat, she's not very well known, but she was 9-1 before this fight. And obviously that connection with Roy Jones Jr. I mean, for Roy Jones Jr. to take the time to be in the gym with any fighter means something. And he decided to do this with Ikram Kerwat. And for her to lose from, against an unheralded Brazilian fighter is pretty significant. So let's see where she goes from here. Let's see if she stays with Roy Jones Jr. And let's see if she's able to bounce back from the loss. Now, on Saturday, May 25th, from the Estadio de Baseball in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, Sanford gave us on the Azteca channel Argentinian legend Marcela La Tigresa Acuña getting a complete controversial draw against Mexican Jackie Nava in a 10-rounder at 122 pounds. Now, this fight, David, was a non-title fight. There was no title at stake. Jackie Nava, I think she is a WBA 118-pound champion, and Marcela Acuña is the IBF 122-pound champion. But there was a little bit of controversy before the fight because, as the story goes, on Acuña's side, she believed that they were going to fight for Jackie Nava's title at 118, and she actually made it to Mexico a week before weighing 118 and or near 118. And when she was told that it wasn't on the line, she went back to 122, and I guess she didn't want to put her title on the line against Nava at 122, so there was no title at stake. So they were just fighting a 10-rounder, and it was a draw with scores of 95-95 and 96 twice and 96-94 for Acuña. I think that was the most accurate score, the 96-94 Acuña. It was very controversial. A lot of people saw Acuña win, including the Mexican TV, who are part of, you know, Sanford has the Azteca channel, and that's who was scoring the fight. And they actually scored it for Acuña. Acuña was more accurate, busier. She was landing the right hand almost at will. And Jackie Nava looked a little bit tired, not as active as we've seen her before. And she didn't admit to the defeat. She thought she had closed it out in her post-fight interview. But the rest of the world that's seen that fight, I haven't seen one person say that they saw Jackie Nava win that watched that fight. So if you haven't had a chance to watch it, I strongly recommend it. It's on YouTube already. And also on the same main event of that card, Kenia Reyes defended her interim WBC 108-pound title for the third time with the unanimous decision over Venezuela's Levin Flores. Scores there were 100-90, 99-91. And 98-92. Now, the same night in Poland, Ewa Bronica scored a majority decision over Janet Perez from Mexico in a 10-rounder, defending her WBO 130-pound title. Scores there were 97-93, 96-94, and 95-95. And from the MGM National Harbor in Oxon Hill, Maryland, Matchroom Boxing gave us on the Zone, which I thought, David and Lupi, the best fight up to that point in female boxing of the year, between Jessica McCaskill scoring a unanimous decision over Anaí Esther Sanchez in a 10-rounder, unifying the WBA and WBC 140-pound titles. Scores there were 99-91, 98-92, and in my opinion, a more accurate 96-94. Lupi, starting with you, you watched the fight. What were your thoughts?
I did watch the fight. And, you know, it may not have been pretty, but it was an awesome fight. I thought Anahi was really tough. Jessica's, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but Anahi held more. Jessica never held. Jessica, it was a brawl. And I agree with the decision. I know it was out there that Jessica didn't win, but I thought she won. It didn't reflect the scorecards, right? The scorecards,
yeah,
I thought were off. Because it was close.
They're a little wide.
It was closer than that. It was a lot closer than that.
Well, actually, it's funny because I thought every round was very, very close. But I just thought Jessica won most of them. I only gave Anahi two runs.
Mm-hmm.
Every round was close, though, but it's just Jessica did a little bit more to win the round.
Tough fight. Good fight.
And what I found really interesting, it was like they were almost carbon copies of each other. You know, they basically had the same style. You know, very aggressive, coming forward, throwing a lot of punches.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, not too technical. Jessica McCaskill, I thought she was going to be the more technical of the two. And I don't know if she just threw it out the window like she told us that she sometimes does.
Yeah.
Had her last show. Or it was just Anahi's style that kind of forced her to brawl more. But I thought up to that point was the fight of the year until last Saturday's fight, which we're going to talk about. But on the line, right? We're going to talk about it in a little bit. But on the line now, we don't want to keep her holding because she's in training camp, and I'm sure she has to go to sleep early. We have none other than East LA's David Avila's homegirl, like we say here in Southern California, from East LA, Ceniza Superbad Estrada. Let me patch you in. Ceniza, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good. Thank you, Ceniza, for being... Thank you. Thank you for being with us once again here on the 2-Minute Round. This is your home. You got a fight coming up next week. I'm going to patch you to Mr. David Avila, who's going to start our interview. Go ahead, David.
Ceniza, hi. How are you doing?
Good. Just tired.
Oh, I bet. We have Lupi Gutierrez with us. And I guess you were up there at her sister's gym. And So I just wanted you to know that she's on the line too.
Hey, Ceniza.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Good.
Thank you for having us go up there. We had a great time. It was a nice place to visit, and we had great sparring, so we really appreciate it.
That's great.
Is it tough to spar amateur girls, Ceniza, for different reasons?
Amateurs or pros, I mean, I sparred some really good amateurs up in San Francisco, so, you know, they're, you know, just as tough as sparring professionals, and they're tough girls. You can tell that they work very hard, and they went in the ring, and they're trying their best, which is, you know, something that I needed. I needed somebody who would just keep trying and keep throwing punches, you know, no matter what. They really just kept trying, and they were doing a really, really well, really good job.
Do they remind you of yourself when you were like 15, 16, or even younger, sparring pro girls when you were young?
Yeah, it did. Because you can just see like how much you can tell how hard they work and how much they love the sport. So that's definitely how I was when I was that age.
So you've been boxing for what, 18 or 19 years?
Yeah, I think it'll be 19 this September.
Wow, that is a long time.
You're
only 26.
Yeah.
For everybody listening, she's not 36. She's only 26.
Exactly.
So, what has been the biggest surprise for you since you've been in the sport?
The biggest surprise, I think, would say, like, as far as turning pro, is just how hard it was to, you know, break into the sport and get exposure and to get signed by a promoter and to fight on TV. Like, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be when I first turned pro. Like, when I first turned pro, women's boxing was not where it is right now. So, you know, I thought turning pro would be easy. It would be, you know, like the amateurs. I would be fighting consistently and, you know, making money and stuff, but it took till up until I signed with Golden Boy, which was, I was, what, 13-0, I think? When I signed with them or something like that. So it took up until that point to actually get the exposure and sign on TV and start making good money. So, yeah, it wasn't how I thought it would be. So that's what I learned. A lot of girls now who are amateurs and looking forward to turning pro, hopefully they'll have it much easier than I did.
What are some of the things that you've had to sacrifice throughout your years because of boxing?
sacrificed a lot. I would say besides sacrificing like time with family and stuff like that, the one thing is sacrificing like another career. I would say like sacrificing education or going to school, which is something that like I didn't focus on because I've put everything into boxing, and it's hard to be like a full-time college student, have a job, and then fight. You know, now thankfully I can fight just full-time and not have to worry about having another job or anything like that. But I would say sacrificing education is something that like I would probably tell younger girls now that who finish high school and they want to, you know, go to the Olympics or turn pro, like to still go to college and get an education because you still need something after boxing because you don't know. Boxing's so unpredictable and you don't know being a woman in the sport. Like, you probably won't make enough money to be well off for the rest of your life. So always an education is something I would tell young girls to keep pursuing.
Because of that, what is your secret passion outside of boxing? Do you have one?
Yeah, I love like broadcasting and journalism. That's something that I wanted to do before I started boxing. And even the time that I was boxing, I mean, I still want to do that. It's something that I want to do after boxing. But when I was a little girl, I always watched the news, and I always wanted to be a newscaster. I was like fascinated by the news and the reporting and stuff. So,
who's your favorite?
So, KTLA Morning News is my favorite. Mark Christensen and the whole crew. Yeah, that's my favorite. I still watch them every morning.
So your pro career, who's been your most difficult opponent and why?
That's a good question. I would say, actually, I think my toughest opponent was my last fight in TJ. The girl was from Valenzuela. She had a pretty solid punch, and she was left-handed. And the fights that I've watched with her, like the ones that are on YouTube, she came out fighting totally differently. When, like, in the first round, she came out swinging, and like all of a sudden, her left hand was super straight, and you know, she put up a really good fight. And so I actually started going to the body and breaking her down, and then she quit. But I would say that was my toughest, just because she came out fighting just like unexpectedly. Her style is just different to what we saw on YouTube and her videos, and she was left-handed, so that made it difficult. And I would say that was my toughest so far, in my opinion.
A lot of people are surprised because at 108 pounds, you have four consecutive knockouts. I mean, even girls in the middleweights don't have four consecutive knockouts. What do you attribute that to?
I think it's just the way I throw my punches and turn my shoulders, and I think it's like my technique, besides the type of workouts that I do. But I think I could have had way more knockouts if I started off my career signed with a promoter and they were actually getting me fights with girls in my own weight class. Because before signing with Golden Boy, I was always fighting girls who were like naturally fighting at like they were 112, 115, somewhere like bantamweight coming down to fight me. So by the time we stepped in the ring, they were like 120 something pounds, and I was only like 111 pounds. So, but that's the sacrifices I had to make in order to fight, because I wanted to fight. I didn't want to, you know, not go another 6-7 months without fighting. So I would just take the fights no matter what, because I knew I would win, but I wasn't winning the way I knew I could, which is by getting the knockouts. So now being signed with Golden Boy, I'm able to fight girls at my weight class because, you know, they have, they're behind me. They have the money to fly in the girls who are at my weight class and stuff. So, yeah, I just wish I was able to, you know, fight at 108 and 105 the start of my career, because I believe I would have a lot more knockouts.
Sunita, I'm going to pass you on to Lupi. You have any questions, Lupi?
Yeah, I have a couple. Hey, Sunita. Hey, I'm
Hi.
Sorry I wasn't there for the sparring, but the traffic where I live, you know, in relation to my sister, it's just terrible.
Yeah, I bet.
But she told me you guys had some really good work and that Mariana took a few of those infamous body shots of yours.
Yeah, she's actually very smart. She's a really good fighter. So, we had really good sparring out there. Hopefully we can go back soon.
Yeah, did you get... Yeah, you all
did.
Did you get... do you feel like you got good sparring? Like,
can you hear me?
You were able to go all out?
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you hear me? Do you feel like
no,
with that sparring that you were able to go all out? Or did you... I mean, was it good work for you?
Yeah, it was really good work for me. I felt like, you know, I felt like they were tough enough to where I didn't have to, you know, lay back too much or anything. And there were some girls that kept coming, and I was able to work on my offense. But I think, who was the other girl that I sparred with also besides
Destiny?
Mariana?
Destiny Nino?
Destiny, yes.
Destiny.
I also, some rounds I kind of, like, worked a little bit of more just, like, speed and kind of just staying in the inside and letting her throw, and then I would turn her. So I got to work on a lot of different things throughout the whole 10 rounds, which was great because Mariana was taller than me, and then she was coming forward, and then I would back her up, and then she would come forward. So it was really good. I got to work on so many things. So hopefully, my next training camp, we would love to go out there and hopefully stay for, you know, 4 days or 5 days.
Yes, that would be great. And like I said, you're welcome anytime, and I know you already know that.
Thank you.
You know, I said, you know, you have the heavy-hitting body shot and beautiful footwork. I mean, is that what sets you apart from your opponent? Is that what you would say, those two things?
I think so. I think mainly my, like, defense and footwork is what sets me apart because you don't really see that too much in women's boxing. It's kind of like, either women are just they're just boxers and they move, or they like to come forward. But I like to come forward. I like to find the inside, go to the body. I like to box and move and grip and do a lot of different things. So I think that's what sets me apart from other fighters. Is that I have a lot of different ways to win.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. I love the way you're like. I would say top three without even thinking. Top three fighters because I see what you have. I have one more question. Everyone is talking about Mariana Esparza as a must-happen fight. Who do you think is the real pay-to-see?
That's definitely a must-happen fight, and that's a fight that the fans want, and it'll be a good money fight. So whenever it happens, I'm ready. But right now I want to get some titles first and find a couple of champions that are up there, and then hopefully I know they're planning on doing the same for her, having her match up with some champions, and then we'll both, you know, have bouts and then fight each other. So I'm looking forward to it. Whenever it happens, I'll definitely
See, and that's what a lot of people don't understand, and you understand, is that there's levels to this. You know, there's levels, and you gotta, you know, make the path before you get there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and that's all I have. Sunisa, it was great talking to you. Really great talking.
Thank you. Good talking to you, too.
Thank
okay,
you.
My dad's
high.
Yes.
My
I will.
Okay. Okay, Sunisa, a couple questions before we let you go. I know you said you were tired. I know you're in training camp and you got things to do. Now, I know your dad is your trainer along with Dean Campbell, your dad. They help you with your career. What was the strategy of going up to the Bay Area for sparring? I mean, have you pretty much gone through everybody in LA and now you got to look elsewhere for that sparring?
I would say, yeah, here in LA, it's hard to get, like, consistent sparring partners. And, like, through training camp, my trainer he likes me to get, like, close to, like, what did he say, like 80 rounds? Like, he's satisfied if I get, like, 80 rounds of sparring through training camp. Like, that's how much sparring he wants me to get. But right now, for this training camp, we have 36 rounds. And then my last four fights, I only had, like, maybe, like, my last fight, I probably sparred, like, 8 rounds through the whole training camp. So,
wow.
And the ones before that, maybe, like, another 6 rounds each one or something like that. So, yeah, just it's just hard to get consistent sparring, and I like to spar at least like 3 times a week if I can. And I usually can't do that here at home. I'll spar with my teammates who will help me out who are men. But it's not the same, you know, they can't hit me, to their fullest, and they're, you know, they're big and they're heavy. So, going to San Francisco was definitely something that, we wanted to do because we know that, Babyface Gym has a bunch of girls there and, you know, they're good fighters. So I knew that they would give me good work. So it was definitely worth going over there. And yeah, I would love to go back and get some more work with them.
Have you ever gotten that 80 rounds of sparring like Dean wants you to, or is it just a dream of his?
it seems like it's just a dream of his. Have we ever gotten close to 80 rounds? Yeah, it was most like 40, maybe one time 50.
Wow.
But, I mean, I know a lot of like when men get ready for training camps, I'm sure they can get as many rounds. They can get up to 80 rounds easily because there's so many guys to spar with.
Mm-hmm. Now.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been winning, you know, in great ways without that sparring. So I can imagine like how great my timing is and everything else will be if I actually did get those 50, 60 rounds of sparring.
Now, if you were to fight for a full-fledged world title, I mean, you're the silver WBC light flyweight champion, but if you were to fight for the full-fledged title, would you really, you and your dad and Dean, really make it a point, like you just said, like how much more you could improve with your timing and everything else that could come with 80 rounds of sparring? Would you really look to put that together for that kind of fight?
Definitely, yes. We're hoping the next fight is September. It's not confirmed yet, but it looks like we're trying to get Yesenia Gomez, who's the WBC world champion at 108. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. We'll drive to San Francisco and stay there for 2 weeks straight if we have to get that fun. We'll drive to Vegas, you know, Vegas or wherever it is where we know that there's girls to spar with. We'll definitely try to take the drive and make it happen.
Now, obviously, you know, you have a fight before that, which is next week against Gretchen Avenue, who's 18-10. Her record doesn't show much, but she is a very experienced fighter. But, you know, us, we're on this show. We know female boxing. We had our ear on the ground, and we know that wasn't the first choice of the fighter that you were supposed to face. Are you pretty disappointed that other fight didn't happen?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed because, of course, you know, Yocosta Valle has a better record. I know she's a better fighter than Gretchen. But at the same time, you know, I'm just happy to be fighting and that we have an opponent. And Gretchen has, like you said, she has a lot of experience. So you never know what can happen. Like, I never underestimate an opponent because, you know, she throws punches from weird angles because she doesn't have, like, the best technique. And then, you know, sometimes you could get caught with a punch or you just have to be extra careful when you're fighting somebody who is not really good technically because anything can happen. So I'm just, through training camp, I'm just training as if I'm fighting, you know, the WBC world champion, Yesenia Gomez, or as if I'm fighting another champion because I never want to underestimate my opponent.
And that's completely understandable, but we know that on paper, she's not as good as your last two opponents, which have been Jennifer Leon and Deborah Renfijo, both of them from Venezuela. So what kind of statement is Inés Estrada looking to make next Thursday on The Zone? Because last time you were supposed to fight on The Zone and you didn't, not your fault, but the people in TJ, you know, put you to the side, which your fight was a really good fight. So what statement does Inés Estrada want to make on The Zone next Thursday night against Gretchen Avenir?
Well, I'm definitely going in there to get the knockout. So I don't know what round. It might happen sooner than I think. So, but yeah, I'm definitely going in there and just going to take her out and do what I'm supposed to do with that type of opponent.
Mm-hmm. Now, I find it very interesting what you mentioned about what the things you have sacrificed in the in your life. You know, obviously time with your family, with friends, but more importantly, like you mentioned, quite possibly a career, going to school and learning something. So obviously you're 26 years old. There's a lot of Siniestra Estrada left in boxing. But what does Siniestra Estrada want to do after boxing? I mean, does she want to be on TV as a broadcaster? Is there something else that she wants to do after boxing? And what are you doing perhaps towards that goal? Or is it strictly all 100% boxing right now?
Right now it's all 100% boxing, but I definitely want to start pursuing the other things that I want to do outside of the ring as far as like broadcasting or like reporting, and definitely something on TV, and also commentating too is something that I like to do here and there. But yeah, so hopefully after boxing, you guys will see me on TV reporting for baseball or football or boxing, some sport, definitely.
Hey, maybe you could talk to Sergio Mora, who I know is your teammate, and maybe he could put a good word for you on the zone and get you in there.
Right, yeah, that's what I tell him all the time. Hopefully I can get in there somehow.
Now, my last question before we let you go, we mentioned Marlene Esparza. Lupe asked you a question about Marlene Esparza. And obviously Marlene won some kind of regional title in her last fight. Before I ask you the last question, what did you think of that fight, Marlene Esparza, and I don't remember who she fought, because honestly, I didn't think it was that big of a matchup. So what did you think of that fight before I ask you this last question about Esparza?
Well, I think I knocked the girl out with a body shot in the third round or the fourth round. That same girl, so I was expecting Marlene to at least stop her in the later rounds, not by knocking her out, but maybe like the ref just stopping it. But yeah, that didn't happen. So I don't know. I wasn't impressed, of course. Yeah.
Okay, that's very diplomatic of you, last time you had you on the show, you mentioned that one of the fights that you were that you may be online for and maybe looking for is to challenge the 105-pound WBA champion, Anabel Avispa Ortiz. I don't know if that's still in the cards. You mentioned Yesenia Gomez, the WBC 108-pound champion. But if you were to move down to 105 and Esparza staying at 112, do you think you're kind of moving away from that Esparza fight? And really, at this point, is it something that we really want to see? I mean, if you're going out the world champions, she's the WBO, NEBO champion, do we really need to see that fight against you and Esparza, or is it just more of a grudge match?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't want people to think that I'm moving away from fighting her, because that's not the case at all, because I'll fight her at 112. I'll fight her at 118 if I have to. But of course, I can't even make that, but I'm just saying. my goal has always been I want bouts at 105, 108, and then even eventually 112. But 105 and 108, I can easily make both weights. So why not have bouts in both of those divisions?
Yeah.
And then when Esparza is ready to fight, she can come down to 108, or I'll fight her at 112. Either one.
Okay.
But I mean, I think the fight has to happen just because she like hates me so much that people want to see it. So, and I just want to like shut her up already. So I want to fight her. So we'll see when it happens and at what weight.
So do you say
she's done some trash talking?
You say she hates you. Okay. Would you go on the record and at least say that you dislike her?
Yeah, of course I dislike her. I dislike her because I never disliked her before she opened her mouth, but because she opened her mouth so much, like, of course I dislike her. I dislike her because she's just, like, obnoxious and just has a nasty attitude.
Well, there you go, folks, here on the 2-minute round. Siniestra Estrada goes public and says she dislikes Marlene Esparza. So, Siniestra, we thank you for your time. We know you're tired. You probably ran this morning and sparred and trained. And we look forward to seeing you. David is going to be in the house next Thursday. I'm going to be watching on the Zone. I'm sure Lupi will be
well.
Oh, you're going to drive down, Lupi, from
yeah,
San Francisco?
I'm going to visit my mom. Yeah, I'm going to go visit my mom, and she's right there. So I'm going to go.
There you
I'll
go.
Be right here, Sunisa, ringside.
Oh, cool.
Well,
so
there
much.
You go. Well, there you go. So we wish you all the luck, Sunisa, and we hope to have you on the show back soon, hopefully before your next fight.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Bye, Sunisa.
You too.
Thank you.
And there you have it, folks, the WBC light flyweight champion, Sunisa Estrada. One thing that I did find interesting is that she mentioned that they're talking about Yesenia Gomez, which is the full-fledged WBC light flyweight champion, but we are forgetting about the interim champion, who is Kenny Enriquez, who fought last May 25th. I would find it very, I wouldn't be shocked, but I would find it very disappointing that because Sinisa's with Golden Boy and it's big money, and Yesenia Gomez is with Promociones del Pueblo, who is somehow, no, she's with Pepe Gomez, who is somehow lined up with Golden Boy, that they completely skip over Kenny Enriquez, who has been asking for that fight for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I think the most fair thing of it all, the fairest thing of it all, and David, you could pipe in here right now, is for Enriquez and Estrada to eliminate themselves, and whoever wins goes after the champ Gomez.
I disagree. I think whoever fights Torres is going to beat her. So let whoever fights Torres beat her, and then
Gomez.
They fight each other. Yeah, whoever fights Gomez is going to beat her, whether it's Sunisa or Kenya, they're going to beat her.
But I
think
with
they're
going to
beat her. I think it's,
because if Sunisa Estrada gets the first shot at her, being that she's with Golden Boy and they're lined up with Pepe Gomez, and they can offer her probably more money than Sanford is willing to offer, Enriquez has been the interim champ for 2 years. So she should get first crack at it. So she should get first crack because now in a negotiating table, she's going to be the B side against the champion A side, Estrada, who jumped her. So I think they should eliminate each other, and whoever wins between each other gets Gomez.
Well, I'd rather make it more value, and I'd rather one of them, I don't even care if it's Kenya or Sunisa, whoever, they get the title, then they fight each other with a title on the line, rather than both of them fight each other with no title. Basically, no title. That's a big fight.
Yeah.
That's a super fight.
Yeah, it is a big fight.
There is a super fight, but I just think that if Estrada gets the shot before Enriquez, they're overlooking Enriquez, and that's a shame. And I wouldn't put it past – I mean, Golden Boy is going to do whatever they need to do to get Estrada's shot, but I would be disappointed in the WBC to allow that to happen. But I wouldn't be shocked because, you know, the WBC does what the WBC does. So there you have it. And it's Estrada who's going to be fighting against – Abaniel, what's her name? Abaniel, something or other.
Gretchen Abaniel.
Gretchen Abaniel. Next Thursday.
Out of the Philippines.
Yeah, originally she was supposed to fight Jocasta Valle out of Costa Rica.
Right.
But she has some issues there.
Visas.
As far as the visa issues, I would have loved to see that fight. I think that was a great fight for Sinisa because Jocasta Valle has a good record. And she and you know, it's just we've seen, and no, this is not a knock on Sinisa because she could only go with whoever they put in front of her. And obviously the fight was going to be against Valle, but they couldn't do the visa. But we've seen Sinisa Estrada against this type of fighter plenty of times. Okay, we've seen her against this type of fighter plenty of times, and she's going to knock her out. You know, she's going to knock her out, and then we got to wait till September to see if she makes the fight against Gomez or she ends up moving down to 105 and facing Avispa Ortiz. So now let's move on to the biggest fight of the year. Not so much. I mean,
hey,
the biggest fight
Felipe.
Of the year. So go ahead.
Hey, Felipe, before we
do
that, going back to Ikram, I talked to Ikram Kerwant after her fight, her loss, and she said that they already had the rematch set up.
That's good. Good news. And did she say a timeline by any chance?
No, she didn't say a timeline, but she said it was already negotiated.
Wow, David.
That was the day after the fight.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts
that's
on the rematch. David, your thoughts on the rematch real quick, because, I mean, not going with what we saw this Saturday night at the heavyweights and MSG, which was, I mean, the greatest thing we've ever seen in a long time. But Kurt Watt lost 100-90, 99-91, and 98-92.
Wow.
So basically she was dominated. I mean, one judge saw her not win one round, another judge saw her win one round, and the other judge saw her win two rounds. I mean, is that a fight that you want to rematch for? I mean, if she loses again to Da Silva, it basically says, you know, she has your number, or maybe you're not as good as everybody thinks you are. Okay? So is that a fight that you want a rematch for, or do you just move on and go forward?
That's a good question. I mean, the fact that she wants the rematch says something. It says that something was wrong.
True.
Something was wrong with her, and she feels that she was basically fighting one-handed or maybe one leg, or, you know, something was wrong that we don't know about.
Now, question two is if she's going to stay with Roy Jones, because usually the guys that go with Roy Jones and end up losing, they end up leaving Roy Jones. So we'll see what happens there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's move on. Madison Square Garden, New York, last Saturday night on June 1st. On the undercard of what we saw, one of the greatest upsets in boxing history, and the first Chicano heavyweight champion of the world, like David said in his article. That's a great. I love that word. I love that word, David, Chicano. I mean, when I was growing up, that's what my mom said I was. I was a Chicano. You know, I was born in the United States.
Very
I grew
true.
Up Mexican,
mm-hmm.
and I'm
Mexican
a Chicano. American. Yeah, And nobody has, and you were the only one, David, because you're from East LA, you know, and that's the word that we use a lot down here in Southern California. But everybody was saying Mexican American, American of Mexican descent, or straight Mexican. But you basically said what he really is. He's a Chicano, just like you and just like me, and I think just like Lupi también. So
yeah, just like me.
Yeah, so you put it right there, and I love you for that. So. But on the undercard of that fight, we saw what I thought was a better fight on paper, and which it turned out to be the better fight in the ring as well, because it was an action-packed fight. I think it's the fight of the year so far for female boxing, and one of the best female fights I've ever seen in my life. Katie Taylor scoring a majority decision against Delphine Persoon in a 10-rounder, unifying the division, WBA, WBC, WBO, IBF, 135-pound title. The official scores were 96-94 two times for Taylor, and then 95-95. I scored the fight. I had it 96-94 for Persoon. David, what'd you have it?
Same.
Lupi, did you end up scoring it, or what did you have it?
You know what? I saw four rounds. I had a family thing going on, so I snuck and watched the first round. And I thought, wow, look at Katie Taylor's footwork. It's beautiful. And look at Persoon. She's brawling. She's a little wild. I said, let me come back. Taylor looks really good. I came back in the seventh, so I went the last three rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Taylor was going to get knocked out. I thought she was going down.
Me too.
David, and she described it perfectly, because the first round, it was Katie Taylor all the way. It was Katie Taylor being Katie Taylor. But Delphine Persoon, she was boxing beautiful. And she boxed beautiful in the middle rounds, which she needed to do. But Persoon did not get the memo. And in the second round, she put the hurt on Katie Taylor, aggressive, throwing punches, not really closing the round, but chasing Taylor, but catching up to her and landing combinations. David, what did you see in this fight? And I know that you, in the past, you and I have had our disagreements. I mean, we've been on this show for 67 episodes. You and I had our disagreements about Katie Taylor. You didn't really start believing in Katie Taylor until after she beat Cindy Serrano. You thought she still had an amateur style a little bit, and you weren't putting her in the top levels of the pound-for-pound list. Then after Cindy Serrano, you kind of said, okay, she beat a legitimate fighter, and she's gotten better, and she looks a lot better, and I think that is true. So what did you see in this fight? What happened to Katie Taylor?
Well, I don't think anything happened. I think I mean, nothing happened to her in terms of her not being a talent, but it's like I was telling everybody. They all thought Katie Taylor was going to dominate Delphine Persoon. I said, this is a toss-up fight. This is 50-50. I don't know who's going to win. And that's what happened, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah. We don't know. What if this round was 12 rounds? Or what if it was 3 minutes? That would have been a different fight altogether.
Yeah.
Which is a whole different argument. But the one thing I was happy about was that it was a great fight. And mm-hmm. people are talking
yeah.
about it.
Yeah.
Everybody's mm-hmm. arguing. Everybody's upset. And I was like,
yeah.
that's what women's boxing needs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I you know what, David? I've been wanting to talk to you about this fight since Saturday night, but I wanted to have the conversation here on the show. I didn't want to have it on text like we usually do. And I completely agree with you that this is the kind of fight that boxing needs, because it's a it was an all action packed fight. I have friends of mine that who are not big female boxing fans, but I told them about this fight and they watched it. And I'm not saying they're gonna be female boxing fans, but they appreciated what they saw on Saturday night. But I am
mm-hmm.
disappointed in the result because the person that was supposed to win in the eyes of everybody didn't win, and it just puts female boxing on the same boat as regular boxing, where the
yeah.
judges got it wrong, and people are gonna complain,
yeah.
and people are gonna say, look, boxing's fixed, and Katie Taylor got a gift, and all that. And of all the fights that could have happened, this wasn't the fight that it should have happened. That type
yeah.
of decision, David and Loopy. Loopy, what is your thought on that thought?
I think it taints the win a little. Not a little, it taints the win, you know? It's just, it's not fair for Delphine, who came in as the underdog, and she did it. That would have been great for female boxing. Like, the underdog came and took it, you know? So
mm-hmm.
it taints the win, you know? I saw the pictures of Katie, you know, with her belts, and she should be proud, but I look at the picture and I kind of, like, cringe a little, you know? Like, you know? Just
yeah,
it.
David?
Well, there is still... You know, I didn't really want to jump on for or against anybody. Katie fought her heart out.
Mm-hmm.
Delphine
yeah.
fought
yeah.
her heart out. And I didn't want to really discredit either of them. I didn't jump on any bandwagon against the decision, because I just let the fans do that. I know what I saw.
Yeah.
I know that there was one
yeah.
round that I thought could have gone to Katie that I gave to Delphine. I think it was the 7th round. It was very, very close. And it could have been a draw, really.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, looking back, I think it should have been a draw.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The perfect
I agree
way.
With that. I agree
yeah.
with that. I agree. If you tell me it's a draw, I agree. If you tell me that Katie
yeah.
wins, I have trouble believing that Katie won.
Yeah.
96. If you tell me a draw, I say, let's go with the draw. But, I mean, Delphine was... I mean, she walked out of the ring. She didn't give a post-fight interview. She was,
yeah.
and that's the thing, David, that I've seen also on social media, that, and this is, and I want to look at your thoughts on this, Loopy and David. Delphine Persoon might have had the biggest, craziest training camp of her life. She's in her mid-30s, same as Katie Taylor. She said to herself in pre-fight interviews, and I don't know if you caught those, that she's a police officer in Belgium. She
yes.
trains on the side.
Federal officer.
Yeah, she trains on the side. She doesn't have the luxury of training full-time like Katie Taylor does, because she has all the money and all the support from Eddie Hearn and everybody else. Who's to say that Delphine Persoon on Saturday, June 1st, didn't put the performance of her life
mm-hmm.
and she might not be able to put it on again. And now they're going to do the rematch, because Katie Taylor's saying that we want the rematch. She asked Eddie Hearn, and Eddie Hearn said, we got to do the rematch, you know, because we want to take away the question marks. But who's to say that Persoon can put that performance again? And that takes
yeah.
everything away from her. Loopy, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it does take everything away from her, but what can she do? I mean, she just got to get back in there, and like she said, it's my passion. You know, this is what I love. Well, she's going to have to dig deep and bring it out again. What else is she going to do? You know?
That, David,
like,
that's life, right?
What's that?
Well, the way boxing is entertainment. Did they entertain us? Did they do their job? Yes, they did, to the utmost. And I think when you look back, like when you talk about Gotti and Mickey Ward, you forget who won so many fights. All you know is they put out great fights. The same with Israel Vasquez and Marquez, Rafael Marquez. Hmm. All you remember is they put out great fights. That's
David,
the one thing. And
hold
I think
on.
Of the fight again.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Hold on. We hardly disagree on this show, and I'm going to disagree with you. But before I do, let me pass the mic to Lupe because she had another thing she wanted to say. Go ahead, Lupe.
Wait, what? No, I don't think I did.
Okay. David,
no,
I agree with you.
I said what I had to say.
Go ahead. Okay, perfect. I agree with you. Like, we were entertained and everything. But at the end of the day, Delphine Persoon got on that plane in Belgium with a green and gold belt. And now she's coming home without one. So, yeah, she wants to entertain, but she wanted to be the world champ. At least keep her belt with a draw. Or maybe, in the best-case scenario, go home with all four belts. And, yeah, she wants to entertain, but at the end of the day, she wants to go home with those belts. And she did not get to do that. So, I see what you're saying. As fans, we want to be entertained, and that's great. But Delphine Persoon is sitting at home right now, and she's looking at her green and gold belt that she still has, but it doesn't mean anything anymore because Katie Taylor is the champ.
Yeah.
Well, they're still going to fight again, and that's the point. She gets another crack.
She does another crack,
She gets to prove it. And if she really is the better one, she's going to win.
But let's see what happens because it's not going to be in Belgium. It might be in Ireland. It might be in New York. It might be in Boston where Katie Taylor is still going to have the upper hand. So, I don't know, man. I'm pretty disappointed. I mean, I loved everything else about the fight. I'm disappointed in that aspect of it where Persoon might not be able to put this performance on again. She has to try to do it again. And even if she does, who's to say they give her the fight?
Well, true, but who's to say that Katie Taylor will stand up to that pounding she took again, too?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she nearly went down.
Down. And now, one thing that I find very interesting and like what Lupe said is that the first round we saw classic Katie Taylor and then Persoon imposed her will. And then in the middle rounds, Katie Taylor went back to boxing and she was winning those rounds. But was there more, David, Persoon imposing her will again? Or Katie Taylor just breaking down, being too tired, not being able to box in those last couple of rounds?
Yeah, that's I found it phenomenal that Delphine was able to keep that high tempo. I was really shocked. I thought she was going to slow down. If there was a slowing, I didn't see it.
She didn't slow down. She did not slow down.
No, and that eye, I was waiting for her to say, cut me, May, cut me, because that eye was bad.
Oh, I know. Looks bad. Hey, let me ask you two a question. Can I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does this make Clarissa Shields the best?
I have her on the top anyway. I have her at the top tied with Layla McCarter.
I don't. And I'll tell you why. Because I don't think that – I have a lot of respect for Clarissa Shields. We've had her on the show, and I have a lot of respect for her. But I don't think that she has faced a fighter like Delphine Persoon in her career. You know, we thought that Christina Hammer was going to be that fighter, and she turned out not to be. But I don't know if there's anybody in the weight class that could be a Delphine Persoon for Clarissa Shields. You know, they're talking about Cecilia Brickhouse. Cecilia Brickhouse is not that kind of fighter, you know. And now they're saying that Cecilia Brickhouse might not be even willing to go to 154, and Shields is saying she's not willing to go less than 154. You know,
well, there's a rumor that Layla McCarter may get a crack at her at 154.
And I know that you. And I know.
Racket?
No, at Shields.
That's a strong rumor.
But here's the thing, David. But here's the thing, David. Come on, David. Come on. I know that you're a big Layla MacArthur supporter, and MacArthur deserves MacArthur deserves every accolade bestowed on her. Okay, I agree with you. But that's a mismatch, David. Her skill is one thing, but the difference in size. I mean, come fight night. She's going to weigh 165 pounds, and I'll be shocked if MacArthur weighs 156. So,
I think
Shields is smart enough, because Shields is very smart inside that ring. And forget John David Jackson. You know, Clarissa Shields is going to take that advantage of that 10, 11, 12 pound difference come fight night, and she's gonna use every ounce of that advantage to her advantage, you know. So I love the fight. I want to see Layla MacArthur get that shot. I want to see Clarissa fight somebody as good technical, as great of a boxer as Layla MacArthur is, but the physical advantage that Shields has over MacArthur is really a lot to me, and I don't see MacArthur winning that fight.
I say let's do the fight.
I say the two, but, you know, I'm just putting it out there.
I've seen Stranger Things. I think Stranger Things happen. Like,
it happened. Andrew Reese
knocking out.
Exactly. It happened last Saturday night. Let's move on to
anything
can
happen
David.
In boxing.
let's move on to fight chatter, David, real quick. And the biggest news last week or the last couple of weeks is that something that you've been talking about for quite a while, and you have been somewhat part of it, going to meetings and being asked to participate in certain seminars and discussions, because you are David Avila and you know your stuff, especially when it comes to female boxing. But now the WBC has gone official. Starting June 1st, they have implemented a clean boxing program for women, where all the champions in other divisions have to register in the next 90 days for random VADA testing, and also the first five ranked fighters in each division have to submit themselves to this type of testing. David, knowing what you know,
that begs the question, what happened to the testing with Persoon and Katie Taylor? So far, results have not come out. I called the New York State Athletic Commission to ask for results. They said they declined. They said that it was private, that there was something they couldn't discuss because it was private. I sent them an email again saying that they're a public entity. They have to release this. This was a public fight. Please, you know, release the findings. And I also tried to contact Mauricio Suleiman. I'm waiting for an answer. Hopefully he gets back to me. He's actually pretty good about it. But I guess maybe they're waiting to see what the results are. I don't know. But they were tested. Supposedly they were tested.
Do you suspect
we'll see. That's
one of the
question.
Two? Do you suspect one of the two juicing?
Let's just say I'm going to wait till the test comes out before I say anything.
Wow. I'm not going to say anything, but I know you well enough that I think which way you're leaning, but I'm not going to say anything. Let's leave it at that. Okay. So going back to this fight chatter, the clean boxing program, and Lupe, you've been around a lot of boxers and amateur boxers and USA Boxing and all that, I've been around a lot of female boxers as well. I've had conversations with female boxers about doping and stuff like that. Do you think in the next 90 days, when all these fighters are supposed to register and start getting tested, are we going to see some surprises, or do you think everybody's going to come out clean?
I think majority clean. And maybe I'm naive, but I think they'll be clean. I mean, I know people do like supplements and a little bit of stacking, you know, where it's just on the border. I think people are smarter than that. But I would say majority clean.
David?
Call me naive.
I think certain countries are going to get hit hard. I think Mexico is going to be one of them. I think the fact that they have tainted meat, and there's been several fighters, male fighters, that have tested positive, says a lot. It says that the women should be testing positive too, if that's the case, because of the meat or whatever other reasons.
That would be devastating.
I think they haven't been tested.
Yeah,
that would be
devastating. Mexico's going to get hit hard.
No, that's a good point. I was just thinking our country. That's a good point, David.
I think, okay, I'm going to put it out there because I don't care. And there's no way that this fighter is not juicy. But she's not ranked in the top five. Who is Alejandra La Locomotora Ontiveros, the Argentinian fighter? You know who she is. She's cool. I mean, she looks like Devo. She looks like, I don't know the actor's name, but that big black bald dude with the, he's huge. And I've seen her in person, and she's huge, okay? But she's not going to get tested because she's not ranked in the top five. So she's juicy. But everybody else, they don't look that big to me like she does. But I agree with David that I think we're going to see some diuretics. I think we're going to see some substances used to lose weight, to be able to make that weight.
Yes.
And we might be able to see some tainted meat. But let me put it out there, okay? Obviously, last year we had the biggest star in boxing, Canelo Alvarez, come up dirty for Glenbuterol, which is, obviously known in Mexico for being in meat. And he completely said that was why he came up with that substance in his body, because he ate some tainted meat. He was suspended. We all know the story. What happens, David? Total example. If Mariana Juarez comes up with the same thing.
I'd hate to see it happen, but, I won't be surprised many of the champions in Mexico are test positive.
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But then the WBC is going to have to come down hard on them and
whatever happens.
And suspend them. Let me do this. Okay. Let's go. Give me one second here. My computer's not. Let me.
But if they go ahead and suspend the women, they're gonna be like, why did we get it first instead of the guys? You know what I mean?
But the guys have been tested. The guys have been tested.
No, but did Canelo? He didn't get suspended, right?
Yeah,
Canelo?
He did.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see.
Then they are going to come down hard.
Yeah.
Okay, so really quickly here. WBC Mexican champions. Brenda Flores. She could come up tainted. She eats meat. I could guarantee you she eats meat. And she come up tainted. She's a 102 interim champion. She hasn't defended the title, by the way. Light flyweight. We have Yesenia Gomez and Kenny Enriquez. Both of them, I'm sure, eat meat. Could come up tainted. Flyweight. La Roca Zamora, Mexican, she could come up tainted. Super flyweight, Guadalupe Martinez, Mexican, could come up tainted.
Oh, boy.
Super bantamweight, no. And that's pretty much it until we get to, until we get to heavyweight, which is Alejandra Jimenez. So there's like four or five fighters there that could come up tainted, and that's only the champions. That's kind of the top five rated in each division, which most of these divisions are Mexican, the first five are, a lot of them are, at least the lower weight classes, they're all Mexican on there. So let's see what happens. And also, I don't know about other places, Africa, David, Africa or Southern America that have that type
everywhere.
Of Yeah.
Everywhere. Every country.
Yeah.
Not just Mexico. And the United States, too, there's a lot on the East Coast that I think are guilty of using PEDs.
I'm talking about coming up positive because you ate tainted meat. Is there any other countries out there in South America,
I don't know.
That might come up positive?
I don't know about the tainted meat. I'm just talking about the juicing period.
Okay.
Let's
move on to our upcoming calendar. We have anything else? Actually, before we move on, Lupi, do you have anything in our fight chatter, anything that around the boxing, female boxing world that you want to discuss?
Nothing off the top of my head.
David, any news
nothing
that you might have up your sleeve like you usually do?
Let me see. There's a lot of female boxing going on next week. Next week you have, after Sunisa on Thursday, at the Avalon in Hollywood. Then on Saturday, Pico Rivera, you have Adelaida Ruiz and a fight card. And also Lorraine Villalobos is also on that same fight card. And then on that same day in Las Vegas, Michaela Mayer is also fighting. And
well, let's
she's
go to that
fight against the.
Let's
yeah,
let's
hit
the calendar.
Let's hit the calendar. Okay,
oh,
Friday.
Sorry about
tomorrow,
that.
Sorry, yeah, you're getting ahead, David. Getting ahead. Tomorrow night, June 7th. David, this is a fighter that I want to see. Obviously, I've been slacking a little bit. I'm going to go on YouTube and look for her fights. But I want to see her on stateside. Anthony Green's Christina Lizarazu versus Deanna Hobbs in the 10-rounder for the WBO 140-pound title. Lizarazu took away Alicia Baumgartner's O. She's regarded as a really good fighter, but we haven't seen much of her here in the States because she's from Greece. But my bad. I'm going to look her up on YouTube and try to see some fights of her. I suggest that maybe you guys do too as well. Maybe we could have a little conversation about her on June 20th. What do you know about her? Tell us about her, David.
She's a pressure fighter. She fought Alicia, who's a boxer puncher. And she just put the pressure on her, tired her out by the last three rounds. She was dominating. And I thought that we're going to take the decision away from her. They did not. The fight took place in Louisville. I talked to her after the fight. She speaks Spanish because she's originally from the Dominican. Yes, she's actually Dominican, but lives in Greece. And so now her fight's in Greece. She's fighting in Athens. And she's also managed by Brian Cohen.
Mm-hmm. Wow, David, that's why David Avila, God damn it, because he knows everything about these fighters. So there you go. So yeah, I'm gonna look her up because I like that. And, hey, maybe we can have her in the show. Brian Cohen is here in the United States.
Hey, Felipe.
Yeah.
Felipe, look up the little video clip she did calling out Jessica McCaskill. You like that?
Ooh. Okay, I'll watch for that. That's a good one. You know what? Another interesting thing that I found, David, is that when we had Jessica McCaskill here on the last show, we asked her about unifying the titles, and she wasn't really – she was like, well, I don't know if I want to unify the titles. I'm looking for bigger fights and blah, blah, blah. Remember she said that?
Yes.
Okay, and then I just saw an interview with her after she won the fight where she specifically said that she wants to unify the titles to entice Katie Taylor – to move up to 140. So she basically took my idea and used it in her
exactly.
Interview.
Yeah. Very true. I heard that.
Yeah. Okay. Saturday, June 8th from France, Leticia Azalea faces Anne-Sophie DaCosta for the vacant WB 112-pound title. Anne-Sophie DaCosta, she has a really good record. I want to see her fight stateside. But she has to win this. Well, I'm not a big fan of the WBF. But she's fighting for that title, and that's on Saturday. And the same night, from Toluca, Mexico, former world title challenger Isabel Millan gets back in the ring against Cristina Hernandez in an eight-rounder super flyweight. And on Thursday, June 13th, our special guest from tonight, Sinisa Estrada, against Gretchen Avenil, 10-rounder, defending her WBC silver light flyweight title. Sinisa said it tonight. She said, this fighter, she's not at my level. She's a late replacement. I'm going to go in there and take her out and do what I got to do. So that's what we expect her to do. And then see if we could get a bigger fight from her or for her in September. And on Saturday, June 15th, Quebec, Canada, Kim Clavel against Nora Cardoza in an eight-rounder at 108 pounds. And in Scotland, Hannah Rankin goes against Sarah Curran in the 10-rounder for the vacant IBO 154-pound title. So this Anna Rankin, she loses to Clarissa Shields. She has a couple more losses before that, and she still gets big opportunities, this time fighting for the vacant IBO 154-pound title. So good for her. And like David mentioned it on Saturday, June 15th, from the sports arena in Pico Rivera, California, Adelaida Ruiz against Mirka Aguayo in the 6th rounder at Super Flyweight for a regional title. I'm going to be in the house for that fight card. David, how far is Pico Rivera from the Commerce Casino that I last went to?
It's actually, before you get to the Commerce Casino, it's right next to Whittier. Right by the 6, right off the 605 freeway. There's an exit on the 605 freeway. It's in between, it's before Beverly and 60 freeway. So that's where you get off at the 605. You have to get on the 605 to get there.
Okay, perfect. And unfortunately, because I love to see her fight. I think she's very aggressive. I think she has a great technical style. We've had her on the show before. I love her story. 3 kids, left boxing for 10 years, had a family, came back. Why did she come back? Because maybe not David, because David, I'm sure when he was growing up, I bet you when David was in high school, he was on the school newspaper. And then when he went to UCLA, he was on the university newspaper. So David doesn't have a what if. He might have a what if other parts of his life, but professionally he doesn't have a what if. You know, Loopy might have it. I have my what if. Adelaida didn't want to have that what if. She said, "What if I come back? What if I kept boxing? What would my life would have been if I wouldn't have started this family?" Which I know she loves. She loves the kids. I follow her on social media, and she does everything for her kids. But she didn't want to have that what if, and she comes back. And now she's fighting. She's trying to make her way in boxing. I'm going to be there. I love seeing her fight. So that's going to be at the Sports Arena in Pico Rivera if you have a chance on Saturday, June 15th. And also, like David mentioned, Lorraine Villalobos against Danielle Saldana in a 4-rounder at 108 pounds. And the same night.
Yeah, and Lorraine took that fight with Lulu. That was like the last minute fight, and she took that. That showed a lot of guts.
I gave her a lot of props for that.
I agree with you guys, but that shouldn't have been for no title. I mean, come on. Really? Come on.
Yeah. They couldn't find a replacement.
She stepped up. So hopefully she gets back on the winning track, but you know, she has a pretty good tough fight against Danielle Saldana. Lorraine is like 2-2. Danielle Saldana is like 1-3. So those always make for great fights. And from La Feria in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, Promociones de Pueblo, Televisa, Mariana La Barbie Juarez defending her title once again against Diana La Bonita Fernandez. This is a great fight, guys. I'm going to send you guys links.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you guys don't have access to these fights, but as soon as I get the link, I'm going to send it to you guys so we can talk about it, because Diana Fernandez has been coming up. She did lose to Mariana Juarez's sister, Lourdes Juarez.
Lulu.
But one thing that Diana Fernandez and her sister are good at is trash talking, and they've been doing a lot of it. Okay?
I love it.
I've read it.
and this is going to be in Diana Fernandez's hometown. Ciudad Juarez is Diana Fernandez's hometown, and Mariana Juarez is going to her opponent's hometown as a champion, and she's going to defend her title. So that's going to be a great fight there. And then David is going to make a trek to Las Vegas. Poor David, he's going to go all the way to Sin City, the greatest city on earth, quite possibly, to the MGM Grand Arena to see Micaela Mayer against Lisbeth Crespo in a 10-rounder at 135 pounds. And David, I'm jealous because this is a really good fight.
I know.
Is it
135?
I thought it was 130.
Well, BoxRec says 135, but Mayer is like the NABF champion at 130, so I expect that. But I don't know if Crespo has ever fought at 130. Let me check. Go ahead, David. Tell us your thoughts about this fight.
Well, you know, Micaela Mayer is knocking on the door for a world title fight now. And she's got a powerhouse and top rank behind her. Mm-hmm. So if Top Rank says it's a go, it's a go. All they're waiting for is for her trainer to say she's ready. And but I don't think her trainers will ever say she's ready. I think they should just match her now for the title. I think she can handle them. Will she win easy? No. Yeah, do you think she's ready, Loopy? You've seen her in person, too.
Yeah, and it won't be easy. But she's tough. You know? She's got great style.
I think she's... But when are we talking about 130 or are we talking about 135?
130.
Okay.
For me.
So, okay, I agree with you. And I think I've seen her in person as well, and I'm very impressed with her. But, you know, let's go over the 130 champions. We have Hyun Min Choi, 16-0, four knockouts, one draw from South Korea. Can Top Rank get her out? Mm-hmm. Top Rank can do whatever they want. They're going to offer her enough money. Are they willing to do it? I'm pretty sure they are, because this is the only female fighter they have, and they've been building it up very, very well. Now, the WBC champ is Eva Wahlström, who is 22-1 with one loss. I mean, one draw, three
just
knockouts. The only loss has been to Katie Taylor. We have the IBF Maiva Hamadouche, 20-1 with 16 knockouts.
Hard.
Yeah, and then WBO Ewa Bradnicka, 17-0 with two knockouts. Knowing what we know about Top Rank, knowing what we know about Bruce Trampler and Brad Goodman, the fight to go for is Hyun Min Choi or Eva Wahlström. Those are the fights to go for Michaela to get her a world title. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think you're right, mainly because Michaela has an NABF title, so she's ranked in the WBC. Wahlström is WBC. She'll take the title.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then after that, we have Wednesday, June 19th from Chiba, Japan. Miyo Yoshida against Casey Morton in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBO 115-pound title. This Casey Morton from the Bay Area. Loopy, how familiar are we with Casey Morton?
Wait, what was that?
How familiar are you with Casey Morton?
I am familiar a little bit. My sister's more familiar because she's worked more, you know, with her. But I know she has that other title. What is that other title? Intercontinental?
She lost it.
Right?
She lost it.
Oh, she lost it the last one. Oh, they were pretty quiet about that then.
She's trained by Donitos Donaire's. Actually, no, I'm sorry. She lost for the vacant WBO Asia Pacific Super Flyweight title. She lost that. But then somehow she got to fight for it again in her next fight. And she won that fight against Chia Igano in the Philippines. But now she's fighting a 12-1 fighter in Japan for the vacant 115. Miyo Yoshida.
Yoshida's good.
No knockouts. She's only lost once to Yuki Koseki. No big names. No big names in her record. But like David says, 31 years old. Really good fighter, and I would expect on the prizefighters.com, which is your all-female boxing website, where Mr. David Avila is the chief editor, and I myself have the honor of writing for it, we should expect a report about this fight from our Japanese correspondent, whose name is, David?
Yuriko Miyata.
Exactly.
Miyata.
Yeah, so we should be expecting
something
from them.
Very good.
So, our next show is scheduled for June 20th. Lupe Gutierrez, I give you all the thanks in the world for being with us. And I'm sure you're going to be with us on June 20th.
Thank you guys.
And welcome to the team.
Yeah.
We got a lot to talk about next June 20th.
Thank you.
Fairly quickly, Leonardo Atu, Tinias Estrada, David's going to be there. Adelaida Ruiz, I'm going to be there. Micaela Mayer, David's going to be there. Mariana Juarez, I'll send you guys the link. And we'll talk about all that on our next show and anything else that comes up. Anything that you guys want to say to close the show?
Did I pass?
Well, I'll be. You're the test. We're going to have margaritas next Thursday.
next Thursday night.
Next Thursday. You got to be there, Felipe.
You guys gonna be in LA next Thursday night, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
you
gotta be there.
Where are you going to? What's that place, David? Cholos? Or what's it called? The place?
No, this one is. This time we're gonna go to another Mexican restaurant in Hollywood, which is pretty good too. It's called El Compadre.
But what's that place? That where's your office at?
Oh, El Cholos is my
El
office.
El Cholos.
Yeah.
Hey David, I've been to Belasco, and that was a small, intimate place. Is Avalon?
Right.
Is that big? Is that a really
it's
big
bigger.
Place? I mean, should I?
It's not much bigger than the Belasco, but it is bigger. It's
okay,
a bigger
so I should
place.
Get ringside, huh? I should get ringside seats while I'm sitting right there.
Oh, yeah.
Or... Okay.
Yeah. If you get your tickets now, you should be able to get the ringside.
Yeah. Okay. Right on.
Okay, folks. So we'll talk about that. We're gonna have the thoughts on the Cinesa style fight from David Avila, who's gonna be covering the fight, and from Lupi Gutierrez, who's gonna be sitting ringside as a fan. So we're gonna get both angles there. So with that said, we thank you for being with us here on the 2 Minute Round. You're hooked to Jab's look at the female boxing world. Our next show is scheduled for June 20th, and we thank you and good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's go!